RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Foyk up here on this edition of the podcast powered by Roman and Medterra. We are going to talk about the actions of Colby Covington in and out of the octagon. We're going to preview UFC 253. We're going to have a little buy-sell on Michael Chandler, who is now a UFC fighter. We're going to talk about the main event of the Bellator card coming up on Saturday. Yes, we've got a Bellator card on Saturday. The European series will be in Milan, Italy. Also, we're going to talk about the real sports piece that aired on Tuesday night about weight cutting in MMA. And of course, as the show goes on, we're going to let you know about the special offers that Roman and Medterra do have for the MMA Report podcast listener. Daniel, how you doing here on this early Wednesday afternoon, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well. I'm glad to be talking to you once again. Obviously, our hockey teams are colliding in the Stanley Cup final, so that's a funny occurrence that is happening. But feeling good talking to you, Jason. And although it sucks that I think the theme of our show, at least at the forefront, is going to be negative. You know, I want to talk about some mixed martial arts action, but unfortunately, I think it's outside of the cage that has kind of dictated this entire week of mixed martial arts coverage.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question about that. You know, one of the things that, you know, we want to talk about Colby Covington, you know, one of the things I tweeted right before the fight started, I said, you may not like Colby Covington's political thoughts, but you have to admit how talented he is. I expect to see Covington win by decision. Of course, we saw Colby Covington ultimately get a fifth-round stoppage victory due to an injury that Tyron Woodley suffered there in the fifth round. But once again, you know, a dominating fight for Colby Covington. He won every round. And first of all, on Tyron Woodley is effective. This guy has now lost 15 rounds in a row, Daniel. That, like, it is, like, there's this part of, like, I thought the first 2 minutes of the fight, I thought Woodley was looking good. I thought we saw an aggressive T-Wood, a aggression that I feel like we have not seen from T-Wood in a long time. But it just felt like once Colby Covington got the fight to the ground, it's like that, you know, whatever positive vibes that Tyron Woodley had going in that fight, they just went away. And at 38 years old, I just don't see a path to Woodley getting back to the UFC welterweight title.
Yeah, for Woodley, that's a difficult path regardless of age. But between this performance and the last performance, it does seem like Woodley will no longer find himself a part of that elite discussion. Obviously, crazier turnarounds have happened in the career. This is a guy who fights ago was the top fighter in the division. So you never want to completely write someone off. But if Woodley does make the comeback to a championship fight, that would be improbable. I think the thought process here is the career is winding down. Possibly retirement if that's what he's into. But certainly not fighting a top five welterweight next. I mean, this was just a difficult fight. It was a dominant performance from Colby Covington. You know, round two was solid for Woodley. Round four, man, that was Colby's round, though. And really, really solid kicking from Covington. But the story of the fight was the wrestling, the top control, the strikes, and the dominance, outright dominance. And Covington has certainly established himself as one of the best fighters in the roster. I mean, this is a guy who has an opportunity to be an undisputed welterweight champion. Obviously, if he doesn't get his face broken by Kamaru Usman, he might be able to do just that. I think for Colby Covington, he's in that group with Edwards and Burns and Masvidal that are the blue chippers at 170 pounds. The problem is the comments he made before the fight, the comments he made after the fight. I would equate this situation to, let's say you're in eighth grade, you take a test and you get 100 on it. But as you get up to turn in your test, you just have a pile of crap on the floor because you pooped your pants. No one cares that you got the 100. All everyone's going to talk about is that you pooped your pants. And when I look at the Colby Covington situation, he did not only poop his pants, but he pooped in the closet, in the cupboard, and all over the teacher's desk.
Yeah, there's. We'll get into his comments here just momentarily. I want to mention this note coming in from Mike Coppinger, who works for The Athletic, where he tweeted here on Wednesday afternoon, right as we do this show here, Daniel. He goes, the UFC Fight Night card headlined by Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley pulled in more than 1 million unique viewers on ESPN Plus on Saturday. Sources tell The Athletic, as Mike writes, a big number on its own, but especially considering the NBA Eastern Conference Final and the Stanley Cup Final were on that night. That is a very interesting note to note how many viewers at ESPN Plus did. But, Daniel, while, the thing with Colby Covington is if we think about the narrative of Colby Covington, not just what it is, as we sit here on Wednesday, September 23rd, but we think of what the narrative has been about Colby Covington for the past couple of years. I mean, let's be honest about it. Ever since, the way he promoted himself leading up to the Damian Maia fight, this has been the narrative with him where, probably 90% of the debate about Colby Covington has nothing to do with what he does inside the octagon. It is about what he does outside the octagon. And these were the comments that Colby Covington made at the post-fight press conference. Quote, "The Black Lives Matter is a complete sham. It's a joke. They're taking these people that are complete terrorists. They're taking these people that are criminals. They aren't people that are hardworking Americans, blue-collar Americans. These are bad people. They're criminals. They shouldn't be attacking police. If you're breaking the law and you're threatening cops with weapons, you deserve to get what you get. Law enforcement protects us all. If we don't have law enforcement, it would be the wild, wild west. Woodley's a communist. He's a Marxist. He stands for criminals. He hates America. And that's why he got broke tonight." Then on the post-fight show, Colby Covington says this to Kamar Usman. "Who did you get a call from?" Covington asked. "Did you get a call from a freaking your little tribe? Did they give you some smoke signals for you? You're a joke, Marty Fake Newsman." Now, Dana White, the president of the UFC, was asked about comments made by Colby Covington in relation to free speech. And this is what Dana White said. "One of the things we've never done here in the UFC is stop people from expressing how they feel about certain things inside or outside the octagon. Even if it's me, if it's about me, who's more about free speech than we are? We literally let our people do or say whatever it is they do. It's normal." Let me say this, Daniel. This is just kind of my overall take on this whole situation, and I'm going to get brief and quick to the point. The Colby Covington comments that we have seen over the past couple of days, it's hate speech. It is racist statements. If you do not think that is hate speech, you do not think that is a racist statement, here's what you need to do. Take those quotes, go to your local grocery store, sit out there for 2 hours and ask and hand these quotes to people and see what they say. And I want to use a line that Ian Beckles, who does a show for Radio Influence, said about 2 weeks ago. He goes, "If you do not believe in equality, you're the problem." Let me also say this to my fellow MMA reporters. If you continue to give Colby Covington a platform to spew his hate speech, to spew his racist comments, you're as much of the problem as well.
Yeah, I think Colby should be out of the UFC. Seriously. I seriously think that. Why do I think that? What he said is not acceptable. What he said to Kamaru and that show, what he said, "Who did you get a call from? Did you get a call from freaking your little tribe? Did they give you some smoke signals for you?" That's racist. That's really racist. That's no longer a political discussion. If Colby wants to be the Trump supporter guy, that may rub some people the wrong way, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with him getting the call from the president. In fact, that's kind of a cool moment, right? That's a viral moment. Colby does have value. Colby Covington said something that was racist, really racist, looking at Kamaru, a peer, a black peer, and he tells him that. He tells him, "Did you get a call from freaking your little tribe?" That's racist. At some point, as a mixed martial arts community, we have to hold people accountable, right? Like we talk about a cancel culture and all of that stuff, and we hand wave it. But at some point, some comments are so egregious that we need to hold people accountable. We need to have standards so we can protect people in our community. So people who are a minority in a community feel as though we've got their back. And if we have one of the top stars in the promotion talking to another black athlete and, again, asking him, did you get a call from freaking your little tribe? Telling him that. If we can't make a statement as a community that this is like this, we're not going to play with this. Done. Get out of here. Or show remorse. Show remorse. Acknowledge what you said was bad. At the very least, do that. But this was one of those things where it woke me up. It was like, all right, enough's enough with this Colby Covington nonsense. I know nothing will happen. Dana White has been spineless with his reaction to this. But this was bad. You know, whatever you want to say about this, the Black Lives Matter deal is a very difficult topic that requires nuance. It requires listening and empathy. But the way Colby has gone about this discussion is not empathy. It's just been using it the same way he uses first responders in military as a shield to get more attention. He uses them as a shield to defend his awful statements. It's one thing to look at what has transpired and have a nuanced opinion about that as regards to the riot and the protest. But to call the Black Lives Matter a complete sham, to call it a joke is insane. You know, to deny that racism still exists is insane. Let me tell you how insane this is. Think about this for a moment. Jason, how many people in the world right now do you know are 65 years old?
Outside of my grandparents, probably a handful of people.
Just a handful. But all of those people were alive when the 14-year-old Emmett Till was lynched on a tree and the people who did it were acquitted. That was 65 years ago. Bruce Springsteen is 71. And you're telling me 65 years later, that same society where that took place is fine? That we are that revolutionary that there are still not remnants of that? So to deny racism is so hurtful to this country. I just had to get that off my chest. Because Colby's talking about that, I feel like it's worth pushing back on that statement. Regardless of where we are today, clearly when you look at our history, we have work to do. That was only 65 years ago. So I just wanted to make that point. Back to Colby. What he said was awful, and I didn't even get into him calling Tyron Woodley a terrorist.
One of the things I would tell people to check out is the Body Lock podcast that was with Matthew Wells and Anthony Walker, as they talked about, and you can see it right now on YouTube, you know, it's titled that the UFC needs to address Colby Covington's blatant racism that he had said there. So it's something I highly recommend. And, you know, and to me, it's, I look at these UFC statements and I just go, if Colby Covington was the first fight of the night, Daniel, he's already cut. There's no question about it. But the fact is like, it really bothers me that we're giving someone a platform for hate speech. And that's exactly what it is. And this is, it has, you know, I could care less, you know, if you're a pro-Trump guy like Colby Covington is, or you're indifferent, or you hate Trump. You know, the fact is that it's, when you look at these statements, as I said, it, to me, it's hate speech, it's racist speech. And Sajar Eubanks was talking to the media earlier today in Abu Dhabi, and it was, if you go to Aaron Bronister's Twitter account, you'll see the full videos up there. It's like 4 minutes of her talking, and this kind of sums up what she had to think about Colby Covington. She goes, quote, "I don't think Colby's acting that much." She later goes on to say, "To act like a racist to me is to be a racist." Hakeem Dawodu, he was asked about it as well. And it's just, it's, the problem is that Colby Covington, you know, all I can say, Daniel, is to me, this guy, he's spewing hate. That's exactly what he's doing. And the UFC, for, you know, the fact that they're Like, is it wrong for me, Daniel, to say the UFC is condoning this speech?
Yes, because there's a history. There's a history of them punishing others. So if you punish others for things that they were justifiably punished for, but you don't punish Covington, you are condoning it. This is something that they're obviously aware about. If you're Disney, if you're Mickey Mouse, you have this on ESPN. You're broadcasting this. Like, how do you sit well, and how are you sitting well with that? With him calling Tyron Woodley a terrorist. And he wasn't the only one. Tito Ortiz did too. Let's not forget about Tito.
I saw that.
To call someone a terrorist is insane. We were all alive when 9/11 happened. Okay. That's a terrorist. Call Tyron Woodley a terrorist? You know how crazy this world is? How easily people are influenced? Your words matter. And when you call someone a terrorist, that is not trash talk. That's dangerous. That's really dangerous.
This is also the problem that, look, I don't know what it's like to be an African American living in the United States. I'm a white guy. I have no idea what it's like. Colby Covington has no idea what it's like for example, Tyron Woodley to walk the streets. And that to me, it's one of these things of, I just look at this, Daniel, and it drives me crazy. The fact of, it's like when I turn on TV and I see four white people talking about race relations in America. And I'm like, get the F out of here with that. Like, I don't want to hear four white people talking about it. And it's just also, it's just, I look at it and I guess as much as, you know, I'm as much looking at Dana White at this point than anything else. The fact of he's condoning this. I just look at it and I just, man, it's sad what our world has come to, Daniel, is about the best way I can put it.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad because whenever you have a group where it feels as though there is not a rule of law, kind of, there's not, if you have a group and somebody crosses the line and nothing happens to them, then you question everything about the group. Then things start getting crazy. And in this case, Colby crossed the line in a major way. This is not a political discussion. Have your opinion, but this is not about that.
You know, the other thing that stuck out to me about it, it was on the ESPN Plus broadcast right after Colby won. He's doing his, Bisping or Felder? I think it was Felder who was doing the interview. And you just see how quickly Colby Covington just goes into straight up yelling. And I'm just like, it's one of those things of like, to me, I kind of sit there and go, and look, I don't know Colby Covington, never talked to the guy. I don't care to talk to the guy at all. But to me, like how quickly he turned into this yeller, it just kind of, I think, emphasizes my opinion that it's hate speech.
Yeah, he just comes across as someone who lives in his own fake reality. It's ironic that he calls him Marty Fake Newsman when it's kind of like you look at this guy and he's in this crazy bubble. And it's a dangerous bubble to be in. Again, I am someone who generally is empathetic and sympathetic to people making mistakes. I think we all are human and we all make mistakes. But this is an instance where I think the mistake is incredibly egregious. A statement needs to be made for the community. Like, trash talk, it's the fight game. I understand all that. But this transcended the fight game. This transcended trash talk. Calling a peer terrorist. Telling the other one about his tribe and smoke signals. Get out of here. You do not talk to people like that because it is racist. There's a fine line. Colby crossed it. And for me personally, I would kick him out of the sport. I don't care how good he is. I would say no. This will not stand. There are types of hurt, like speech, that we will not allow. We will not allow racist and hateful speech. because we are here to protect the community. Martial arts does not have any room for this. At least I hope it doesn't. But unfortunately, it seems like we are allowing it.
No, you're spot on. We are a sport that, for whatever reason, this is just allowed to go on. And to me, if we want to talk about change, Dana White has the opportunity to lead that change. Do I think he's going to lead that change? No, I do not. Once again, I'll say this. I said this a second ago. I just want to emphasize this point again. If you are a reporter that getting clicks on a Colby Covington interview is means more than you than giving a platform for someone to spew hate, you're as much of the problem. You're as much of the problem. Look, there's Colby Covington's people could call me tomorrow and say, we want to give you an interview with Colby Covington. The answer would be no. And I wouldn't care if he got a million hits. Would not care. I'm not giving that guy a platform.
Yeah, man. There's a difference between, I believe there's a clear difference between what we've seen out of fighters in the past who have made bad mistakes, where they've said a slur or they said something bad, but they've apologized, they've received consequences, and we've all acknowledged that. I think what makes this so different is you saw this coming a mile away. It's a pattern of racist statements, fight to fight to fight, and there does not seem to be any consequences, and it seems like there's not an acknowledgement from him from what he said was racist, and it wasn't just a word. It was a combination of words that was really connected to a very real idea. And I guess, you know, it's not what we want to talk about. Hopefully next week, our primary focus is on what transpired on this sweet pay-per-view main event we got this Saturday. I can't wait for that. And we're about to dig into some mixed martial arts. But it's a conversation that both me and you as humans have to have. It's not a fun conversation, but we had to have it because as humans, it's important to have some level of ethical integrity, some level of moral value. And it's not restricting free speech to say it's not okay for you to be racist. Okay. And this is not pointing at someone and calling them racist and not having proof. We have you telling Kamaru Usman, did you get smoke signals from your little tribe? Sit in that. Think about it. That's the thing. The less you say that, the less you say the words Colby actually said, the easier it is to defend him. But the more you go back to the transcript and read what words came out of his mouth on national television, the more you live in that reality, the more you cannot make an excuse for Colby Covington, no matter how talented he is.
Spot on, man. Spot on, bro. It's a conversation we had to have on the podcast. It's an important conversation to have because, look, as I say this, and I'll end on this one in terms of this topic, is if you do not think that is hate speech, if you do not think that's racist statements, I don't know what to say to you. I really don't know what to say with you. Of course, as Daniel mentioned, we are going to get into previewing UFC 253. But before we get into that, I do want to let you know about one of our sponsors this week, and it's Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a healthcare professional who can prescribe you real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it.
As you just heard Daniel say, go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And when you use that unique URL, that lets Roman know you heard about him here on the MMA Report. That does help us out a lot. Of course, other great ways to show your support for this show, give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. As always, we really do appreciate it. Appreciate Roman, who's been with us about 3 years now. So appreciate their support here of the MMA Report podcast. But Daniel, coming up this weekend, we have got UFC 253 here in the U.S. on Saturday night. But of course, early morning there, in Abu Dhabi on Sunday morning. We've got two title fights, Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. Of course, Israel defending the middleweight title. Then we got the vacant light heavyweight title on the line, Dom Reyes versus Jan Blachowicz. Let's get right into the main event. And I got to mention this tweet that Sean Alshadi had earlier today that I guess I probably should have realized this number is what it is, but I guess I just really hadn't thought of it that way. So there has been 278 title fights in UFC history. Only 6 of those, 2%, have seen both champion and challenger carry undefeated records into the fight. And Sean brings up this question. I'll bring up the question to you, Daniel. He goes, so it's fair to ask, is Adesanya versus Costa the greatest battle of UFC unbeatens ever?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. Oh man, I'm gonna have to get this list in front of me. I will find it. I will find this list in front of me, and I will answer this question. Let me tell you this much though. When I was doing the preview prep work for this fight, I tell you what, I went back and forth. Every time I watched Paulo Costa fight, I was like, I'm picking Paulo Costa. Every time I watched Adesanya fight, especially that Whitaker performance, I'm like, I'm picking Israel Adesanya. Both these guys are blue chippers, and they both would be the undoubted kingpin in their division if the other one didn't exist. But I really, really genuinely feel like even though this is the first meeting, this won't be the last. So when you look at the resumes of these two, Adesanya's already put himself in a position where he's already like having a legendary career and he just feels like he just got here. So he's already like, whoa. And then Paulo Costa, I mean, he's put in some hell of a performances. It was a great fight against Yoel Romero last time we saw him. So I just think this is an appetizing contest. And without having the other fights in front of me, which I will get in front of me, I think I will do that. I would say probably so, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one of these fights that, you know, first off, I think one of my question marks heading into this fight is, what does Paulo Costa look like if this fight hits the championship rounds?
Yeah, well, he got tired in a fight where it goes to the third round, right? I mean, for Paulo Costa, because the thing is, so like him and Israel fight completely different styles. Paulo Costa went in there at 3 rounds against Romero, and this guy just goes balls to the wall. It's just nonstop, nonstop, nonstop. And for a guy who looks that huge, it's not a surprise that in round three he was tired. I think in round 3, 4, and 5, I think Paulo's going to get tired. Obviously, Israel much more patient. I mean, this dude had so much patience in the Yoel Romero fight. That was such a stinker. But I think, without a doubt, Paulo will get tired if it goes 3, 4, and 5, because I think it would be a mistake for him to change his approach, because I would go with what brought him to the dance. With Adesanya, I think he can't get suckered into a rock'em sock'em fight. Even though Paulo Costa is a guy who will beat you down and then score the knockout, not as much like boom, one punch, you're done. I think for Israel, if he waits it out, 3, 4, and 5, those could be dominant rounds. Jason, I have the fights in front of me. Here they are for the other unbeaten. This is from Sean Alshadi, as you mentioned. So we have some Rousey fights. She took on Sarah McMahon, Betch Correa, Kat Zingano. We have Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Karolina Kowalkiewicz, Rashad Evans, Lyoto Machida. Adesanya when he took on Paulo Costa, and then Rousey versus Holm. So I think without question, it's got to be Adesanya Costa.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got to see how the fight plays out on Saturday or Sunday morning there in Abu Dhabi. I did find it very interesting that earlier today when he was talking to the media, Israel mentioned that the fighter, once he gets through this fight, the fighter that has him interested is Jared Cannonier. If Cannonier gets through Whitaker, he mentioned that that's a fight that kind of him and his team have been looking at. For some time now. So, it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, I think, and also, he was asked about the fact of the fight being in the bigger cage. If he thought that was a benefit to him, and he basically said he's like, look, it wouldn't matter whether we're in a small or big cage. I just think that the movement of Israel is going to frustrate Paulo Costa throughout this fight. I think that Israel will wear him down, and eventually he will knock out Paulo Costa.
Yeah, I think Adesanya is going to win a decision. I think both these guys are just. I think Paulo is just an absolute tank. And I think even if he's tired, I think he's going to withstand the punishment. But it's hard to just do like a Google image search of Paulo and not pick him. You just look at him. You just look at him, and it's just like, how does this cyborg not win the fight? He looks like he was destined to be the UFC champion for 5 straight years when you look at this guy. But I wouldn't be shocked if he wins again. I think he has a type of approach that can throw his opponents off. I think the high volume and success with the accuracy can throw his opponents off. But again, I think Adesanya probably has a chip on his shoulder because that last performance against Yoel Romero, despite retaining his title, had to have felt like a loss. It was not a good performance. It was embarrassing because it felt like the narrative was being set for Israel to explode into superstardom. And he was getting the red carpet, the ESPN, the magazine treatment, which no longer exists, I believe. And he got all that, but he farted in the octagon with the OL. So I think he's looking for a big time performance. This is a heated matchup. I'm excited. But yeah, the middleweight division's interesting, man. I think this is a great fight. Cannonier's obviously a challenger, and I mean, crap. At this rate, the fight this Saturday, if somebody pulls out, might be one of them taking on Chimaev. I mean, crap. That guy might be in the main event on Saturday. You never know. But it's not going to be that long until that dude challenges for a title if he continues to knock people out with one punch. So the middleweight division is full of exciting names, man. And I'm just so excited. But the journey to all those great stories that we're going to see, all those great fights, it starts on Saturday. I think Adesanya does retain the crown.
By the way, I do not want to see Chimaev versus Maya because I'm really fearful of what he might do to Damian Maya.
Dude, that was insane. It's like a video game. The way he just punched him one time and he knocked out Jerald Meerschaert. I mean, oh my gosh. We've gone from like, hold the brakes on this guy, let him get some fights in, and now it's just like, he's gonna win 2 title belts in 2021. I think DC may have said that, but yeah, on a night, that was, I mean, that was unbelievable. But that guy gets me so excited. Like the idea of seeing him one day take on both Paulo Costa and Adesanya one day, especially Paulo Costa, that Costa fight down the line in 2021 maybe. Oh my goodness, I'm excited for that idea.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw. So Stephen Thompson did his first call out he's ever done on social media, and he called out Leon Edwards. Chimaev chimed in and said, "How about I get some of that Wonder Boy?"
No, Leon's like, bro, I'm so glad somebody remembered I exist. He was like, get out of here. But dude, that would be so fast, right? To go from Meerschaert to Stephen Thompson at welterweight. But hell, this guy, like, I would not pick him against Stephen Thompson. I just couldn't do it. But the way that guy's fighting is just like he seems like a mythical creature. He just does. Like some type of centaur, like Spartan that is here and he knows the game and he's gonna knock people out with one punch. So I mean, like, would watch. but skeptical. I mean, obviously he's got to get, a guy's got something if he's double booked, right? Like, that was insane that that happened. But poor Damian Maia. I mean, look, there's a clear path to victory for Damian Maia. Hopefully Chimaev goes out there with the random Marcos game plan and follows the jiu-jitsu guy to the ground, because that worked out so well for Randa against Mackenzie Dern. So if he does that, Maia might get the tap. But I'm excited for that.
Bro, I'm watching that on Saturday, and I'm like, worst FIQ I've ever seen. Ronda Marcos, why are you going to the saying, come on, McKinley, let's play on the ground? That's one of those things of, like, I wish that I just had just the audio of the Ronda Marcos corner, because they had been screaming, no, no.
Dude, that's one of the all-timers. Like, when we think of excuses for poor fight IQ, Mackenzie's on her back, Ronda's on her feet, and she's like, I'm going to the ground with Mackenzie Dern. And like, now you're 500, now you're 10-10, right? Like, that's an all-timer. Mackenzie is a jiu-jitsu wizard. And, that was a... That's something that you got to just stick as a reference point for any time a person makes a questionable fighter IQ choice, because that was a Hall of Fame candidate.
Dude, that was awful. That was just one of those situations of why. Why, that's just one of those things of you just wish you could be backstage, and have a candid conversation with Ronda and her team and go, what were you thinking there? Or is it just, it's just instincts and... You weren't thinking, oh, by the way, this girl's really good on the ground. Co-main event on Saturday, vacant light heavyweight title fight, Dom Reyes versus John Blachowicz. And the question I have written down here is, how much of a shot do we give Jan? If I say we're giving Jan a 30% chance, am I too low?
I think you are too low, Jason. I think you are. I think Dominic Reyes is a clear favorite in this fight. But there's a couple notes I'll give you. The first note, anytime you have a fighter who peaks like he did against John Jones, goes the distance against greatness, you got to be on the lookout for a letdown performance the next fight after. Kind of similar to college football. Whenever you go out there and play Alabama, sometimes you got the body blow theory and it's hard to get back up. So that's a note. Another note I would give you is Jan is a kind of a killer lately. Look at the way he put Luke Rockhold to sleep with that step back left. Step back left, put Luke Rockhold to sleep. Look at the way he put Corey Anderson to sleep in his last fight. When you look at a guy who's a well-tested veteran, I mean, this guy made a name for himself in Poland, KSW, a vet in that organization. Finally, 7 years into his professional career or so, makes the jump to the UFC. So this guy's battle-tested, and he's fortified his skills, and he's only lost one time, and that fight was with Thiago Santos in his past 8 fights. A guy like that with that type of power, that type of experience, I think deserves a 45% chance of winning this fight compared to 55% for Dom Reyes.
Yeah, I just think this is Dom Reyes' fight to win. In terms of the rest of the card, outside of the title fight, what fight and fighters intrigue us the most? The fight on the main card outside of the title fights that intrigues me the most, give me Kai Kara of France versus Brandon Royval.
Yeah, I think that's 100% the pick, right? That's the most interesting fight that's not one of those top two fights. And Kai Kara of France is a big reason why, but the biggest reason has to be Brandon Royval. I mean, what a beautiful story that was, man. When he made his debut against Tim Elliott, major dog, and then he's able to quit his job. What a beautiful story, but more importantly, what a great performance. So I agree with you. That, to me, is the top fight. I think Brandon Royval is one of the most interesting fighters in that whole 125-pound weight class. Like, if he continues to be as interesting as he was post-fight with the victory here, he could be the savior the 125-pound weight class needs, but first he's got to get past a tough opponent in Kai Kara of France. But you know what I'm interested in? For the love of God, does Diego Sanchez still have Josh Fabian in his corner?
Josh Fabia and Stephen Bonner.
Oh, get Stephen out of here. I'm all in on the sole Josh Fabia experience. It sucks whenever Stephen Bonner's involved because now you have an adult in the room.
No, you got it all wrong, Daniel. You got it all wrong.
What?
When this fight happens on ESPN2 on Saturday night around 9 p.m. East Coast time, I don't want to hear the commentary. Just give me Josh Fabia. I just want to hear the corner the whole time. I don't need to hear commentary.
Dude, did you see that video of him with the knife?
I've not seen the video, no, but I've heard the story.
Dude, they posted the video. I was Googling to double check that Fabia was still in his corner, and like 4 days ago. I can't tell if it's a real knife or a fake knife. I swear to God, if it's a real knife, that's the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life. But he's got like 4 dudes in the cage. He's just kind of slowly running at them with the knife as they evade it. And it's insane to watch it in person, like the video. I saw that. I think Emil posted it.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So that was from an incident at the PI, like 6 months ago, maybe longer than that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I think the most interesting thing about Diego is when you listen to him speak. This is a guy who clearly understands he is in the final chapter of his career. He's talked about looking to finish, out his UFC deal and call it a career. You hope that is truly the case and that, he is going to, have these fights and walk out, and it's not going to be a situation where somebody has to tell him to walk out. But it is like, I saw someone posted on Twitter, the part of embedded of him and Josh just basically stretching in the airport is about the best is how I would describe it. But man, that is an interesting duo. Interesting duo. Like, I'm telling you this right now. If you told me they're doing a reality show on UFC Fight Pass, I'd probably watch, Daniel.
Dude, I don't know if I could watch more than a couple episodes. Like, I would be interested. But at some point, I'd feel like maybe I was slowly being converted into a cult. Like, that would be, I would start getting really concerned. But it's crazy. Like it's absurd that Diego has put this much trust into Josh. And I think the last time they fought, I really went hard on Josh, and at this point now we're just kidding around and stuff, and it's kind of funny. We should mention he's taking on Jake Matthews, who will probably beat him. I'll give you a thought here. If you could give Sanchez a retirement fight, who would it be? And I will give you my suggestion. It would be him versus Clay Guida. They had a phenomenal fight on an Ultimate Fighter finale, and I would want to put him against someone who was of a similar generation.
I like that thought process. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That or get Kenny Florian out of the commentary, and get Ken Flo in there. I think Ken Flo and Diego are two guys who are most linked with each other's career. I think because they fought in that first season of the Ultimate Fighter, I think those guys are each other's rival, each other peer. It's not a real suggestion, but when I think of Diego, I mean, I just think this guy, unfortunately for him, never won a championship, but still an absolute legend, even if he's become a parody at the back end of his career.
One of the guys I was interested in watching on this fight card was Nate Landwehr. However, he's off the fight card due to COVID. They signed Klein is going to step in, who's a featherweight out of Eastern Europe, to take on Shane Young. That was someone that had me interested. I'm listed in the Alexa Kammerer and William Knight fight, 205 pounds. That's going to be opening fight on the ESPN2 prelims. Also, another fighter that interests me as well is going to be the one that's going to be in the feature prelim bout, and that's Brad Riddell, who's going to be taking on Alex Da Silva. Brad's, won his fights here in the UFC, 2-0 in the UFC, both by decision. That would be someone that does interest me as well on this fight card.
Yeah, those are solid picks, man. Those really are. I think the other thing I would point to is I would point to three things. One, the other two main card fights we haven't talked about, I would say Sarge Eubanks, interesting because she's returning after her win over Avila, Julia Avila, a few weeks ago. So it's always interesting when you have fighters doing those quick turnarounds, and Eubanks at bantamweight is going to try and build some momentum against Ketlen Vieira. Dawodu Zubera Tukugov is a really solid featherweight scrap, so I'm all here for that. And then I guess the other thing I would point to would be the featherweight fight between what's his name? Shane Young, and I don't know how to say his name, but Ludovit Klein. I'm interested to see what happens in this fight because I'm always intrigued by guys who are newcomers to the UFC. And guys who, when you look at their most recent fights, it's just head kick knockout, punches, and it's just a whole lot of finishes and a whole lot of head kick knockouts. I think for Ludovic, I believe he's won his last seven in a row, and then when you look at finishes, he's finished all but one of his fights. He's only 25. He's from Slovakia. He's got an apostrophe after the L in his name. Sign me up for him.
Yeah, it's I'm looking forward to watching the fights on Saturday night. I think I'm going to go over to a buddy's house to watch the fights. Probably enjoy a few cocktails because I don't have to be at work till about noon on Sunday afternoon. So I'll be enjoying these fights here come up here on Saturday night. Do want to let you know about our other sponsor this week, and that is Medterra CBD. Medterra is one of the leading CBD brands in the industry with a full line of functional CBD products. All their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, and they contain zero THC. I will tell you one of the things when I'm buying CBD and I'm a massive CBD guy is I always look for that QR code on the box and let you know more about the product. And you can check that out with Medterra CBD. And staying healthy nowadays means watching your overall well-being, sleep, stress, overall health. You should prioritize easy ways to boost your immunity. So the release of the new Immune Boost Drops could not have come at a better time.
Jason, you are totally right. I have them in my hands, and honestly, it's become a daily ritual for me. Before I head off to work, because I do work in an environment with other people, it's important for me to have a strong immune system, especially amidst the pandemic. And I do the CBD Immune Boost every single day before work. I feel great, and it's just an awesome thing to add to my daily routine. It makes me feel so much healthier, and Medterra is so phenomenal. If you've listened to the podcast before, you've heard us mention the pain cream that they have. It's just a game changer for anyone that has any type of lingering pain, or they have like a pain in their muscle randomly, maybe due to exertion from a workout or something as simple as bad posture. You apply that pain cream from Medterra, and it's amazing relief to your joints. Medterra is amazing. I love the Immune Boost. I love the pain cream. They've been game changers for me, and they will be for you too.
Yeah, that pain cream, man, it is amazing. As someone who deals with back pain, I put that on, man. I'm feeling so good. So you gotta check out all the products that Medterra has. If you visit MedterraCBD.com, that's MedterraCBD.com, and enter the promo code MMA Report at checkout, they are going to give you 20% off. That's all you gotta do is use the promo code MMA Report at checkout to receive 20% off. You got to check out the products they have over there at Medterra CBD. A couple more topics that we want to talk about before we get out of here on this edition of the MMA Report podcast is Tuesday night. There was a new episode of Real Sports, and I was watching it this morning. And of course, the first topic on the show is about weight cutting in MMA. And right when the piece I knew they were doing, I'm like, man, this is not going to be flattery to the UFC. You just knew it wasn't. And right at the beginning of the piece, Bryant Gumbel's talking about how the UFC was, one of the first sports to come back. And he mentioned this about the UFC. He goes, they have little regard for health and safety of the athletes. Then it goes into the piece. I highly recommend watching it. They followed around Ramzi Ninjam when he was going through his weight cut, fighting for the PFL last year. Also, they showed pieces of Nico Montano when she was supposed to have her title fight in Dallas against Shevchenko. And I guess probably my biggest takeaway from all of this, Daniel, is that it did not make Clint from the UFC PI. They did not paint him in a good light at all.
Yeah, they didn't. You know, when for those that haven't seen the segment, I think the ways in which he looks bad, you can point out a couple things. And the footage from Nico Montano was not from the Real Sports Reporter. It was from someone else who was doing a documentary on Nico at the time, just following her. And anyway, so the things that looked bad was Clint advising her that at 155, based on all the science they did, that she could make 125. It would be hard, she said. And then, spoiler alert, it was pretty damn hard for the 155-pound woman to make 125 pounds. At one point, Clint asked the cameraman to stop filming as things went from okay to bad. And prior to that, there's footage of Nico complaining about a sharp pain in her kidney, which was, acknowledged, but nothing was acted upon at that time, and things got scary. So Clint, when you do stories like this, usually you're going to find someone who you tell a narrative about how they're a bad person, or not a bad person, but they are the person in the story who's making the most egregious mistake, and in turn, they look the worst. And I'm sure Clint's a great guy, and doing all his best, but I think when you zoom out from this whole deal, the deal is simple. It seems as though they're trying to force science to tell them what they want to know, when the reality is the weight cutting in this sport is at a dangerous level, and there is no way of reorganizing the periodic table of elements to change that fact. But it was a very good segment, man. It really was. Whenever Real Sports does a segment about your sport, you know you're screwed, right? Like when Brian Gumbel's talking about, like, if you're a big tennis fan and he's talking about tennis, it's not a good day for the president of the Tennis Federation. That's a hell of a program. I thoroughly enjoy it. I thought they nailed it. I don't think they said anything new, but I thought for someone who isn't aware of weight cutting, it was perfectly framed. They showed you the problem. They explained why it was a problem, like in terms of the game theory aspect of you want to be big because the other guy's big, which makes you want to be big in turn. One thing I'll point at you, Jason, is that there was a moment in the story when I was watching it where it was just one after another, where they show these people in hot tubs. And these are clips we've seen before. We've seen the Joanna weight cutting clip. We've seen the Cyborg weight cutting clip. But when you put those right next to each other, you see two of the toughest female fighters in the history of this sport crying. These fighters, these people get punched in the face every day. They're crying. They're broken in a hot tub. When you see that with also all the other pictures we've seen of people who are killing themselves, literally, it makes you realize how insane the process is.
Yeah, I just know when talking to regulators, and obviously there's regulators out there that they are trying to come up with ways to end massive weight cutting in MMA. And I think at some point it's going to I'm hoping we get to a point that the days of massive weight cutting come to an end in the sport, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. But yeah, it's a piece that I think as MMA people who are around the sport of MMA, what was on that piece isn't really anything shocking, earth-raveling is kind of what we know, but it makes you think about the common person that likes to watch Real Sports. Like, I would love to know exactly what their thoughts are when they see that piece.
Yeah, I think even as a veteran mixed martial arts viewer, it's still startling to see weight cuts. And we've been exposed to that since The Ultimate Fighter, The Ultimate Fighter gave us that transparency, that, well, not complete transparency, right? Like, they would still alter it, but The Ultimate Fighter kind of romanticized this idea, so we've been privy to that. But obviously, with the advent of phones and just everyone's a YouTube vlogger now, you have more access to this footage. So even as someone who knows about this, even as someone who, you tell me Real Sports did a weight cutting story, I could probably tell you the exact story arc, right? Yeah, right? Yeah. You could do it. Yeah. Still seeing the images is startling. And I may get the comparison wrong because I didn't do my research, but I want to say it was the Vietnam War where, I could be wrong about this, where you had pictures from it change the opinion of people about the war. I could be wrong about that, but I know there was some type of conflict where the people saw what was happening and that changed their opinion. And I think this is very similar. The more you see how the sausage is made, the more you are repulsed. If every time there's a weight cut, we're seeing the weight cut, the real thing that is happening, everybody who goes out on Saturday night is killing themselves on Friday night. These great, when you see Cyborg crying in a hot tub, it's just, it makes you really think this, we got to change it. But because we don't see it every single fight week, we're distracted. We don't think about it. But the weight cut deal is a very difficult thing to think about. It's going to require a creative thinker because we've known it's a problem since the dawn of time. People have been working on it for a long time. But the amount of work that's been put into that has led to the same amount of success that the UFC has put into their code of conduct.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you have a visual of something, it makes it real. And you know, I'm sure probably whenever Dana White speaks to the media this week in Abu Dhabi, that he'll probably rail on HBO. And it did note that Real Sports did reach out to the UFC and they had no comment, which I think really should not be surprising about that. But Daniel, let's go on to buy or sell for this week here on the podcast. Michael Chandler is now a UFC fighter. Not really. If people could see me, not shocked face. Kind of saw this one coming from a mile away. Buy or sell, Michael Chandler will be a UFC champion by the end of 2021.
Yeah, I'm going to have to sell it. This is my segment idea. But I felt like we had to do a gimmick, right? Because like we've been talking about Michael Chandler as if he was a UFC fighter several times. But since we last recorded, he signed. So I made it as a gimmick. But hey, bro, Michael Chandler's in a position to end the year as a champion, right? He's the Mr. Backup. I know that pissed off Charles Oliveira. He's in the news today talking about what the hell? What about me? You have this guy who lost to Patricio Pitbull, and he gets to jump over me. He gets to jump over a hooker, you know. So I don't think so, but it's a possibility. You know, just in case you could pull out and we could have Khabib and Chandler could shock the world. I think Chandler's one hell of a lightweight. I don't think he ends the year as champion. I'm selling that.
I would love to go the other way and go against you on this one, Daniel, but I can't. I don't think it's going to come together for him. It's going to be interesting to see who he gets matched up with first, if for whatever reason, Khabib or Justin do not make it to UFC 254. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting options out there. Hell, you know what? Just based on his comments, hell, let's do Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. And I think, you know, Charles is already talking some crap. I'm all in on that. I tell you what, Jason, if we're playing matchmaker, I feel like you have five guys and somebody's going to be left without a dancing partner, right? You have Poirier, Ferguson, Hooker, Oliveira, Chandler. I don't think Connor would fight any of those guys. So what do you do with those guys? What would the matchups be that you would want to see?
Okay, let's say if Connor was involved in that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we'll put Connor in there.
Give me Connor Ferguson.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Then I would say Chandler Poirier.
Oh, dude, that's one hell of a fight. I love that so much.
And then Oliveira and Felder, or not Felder, Hooker.
Yeah, well, Oliveira could certainly be in there. I mean, excuse me, Felder could certainly be in that mix. I mean, he's right there. I think the Conor Tony fight is just like that's the fight to make for Conor if he's not going to fight a super duper star because Tony is just right there. But I mean, crap, we might just see Conor versus freaking Nick Diaz. I think if you're giving me the book, if I'm picking, I'm gonna book the Poirier Ferguson fight. Screw it, I am. I'm gonna book Oliveira and Hooker, and I'm gonna match up Michael Chandler with Diego Ferreira. That's the first fight I would give Michael Chandler, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think for Michael, it's like he doesn't have to get a top five opponent. He can get a guy who's, at the bottom end of the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to push him right away, right? Like, he's got all the momentum, so I think they're trying to shotgun him into the title picture. And there's nothing wrong with that approach at all.
Yeah, and look, in the other, like, if you talk about the quote unquote haters of Michael Chandler, have always been about, well, what if he was in a USADA type program? Well, we're now gonna know. Now, look, I can tell you, Michael Chandler was drug tested in Bellator in and out of competition. So there, I know some people may not want to believe that, but that is there. Also, I don't know how many people realize this. By the way, we have a Bellator card on Saturday. I don't know if people realize this over in Milan. Pretty much, this is a part of the European series. And to me, there's one reason and one reason only that I will, attempt to watch this fight's live, Daniel. And that is the main event, Fabian Edwards versus Costello Van Steenis. Of course, Fabian Edwards, the brother of Leon Edwards. He's undefeated. This matchup was supposed to take place back in May, but of course, that did not happen because of the coronavirus. Costello Van Steenis is coming off that decision loss at the end of last year against John Salter. So, plain and simple, there's one reason to find your way to the Bellator. I believe it's going to be on the Bellator app on Saturday to watch this card. That is definitely Fabian Edwards and Costello Van Steenis. That is the reason to be a part of that.
Yeah, the fight card's weak for an American audience, and it seems like this is made for the European audience. I'd be interested to listen to the perspective from the Europeans, people in the United Kingdom, for instance, who will be watching this. How much this card resonates? My answer would probably doesn't it for them either. But I guess it'd be interesting to get their perspective. But yeah, I mean, we have Bellator doing their version of Fight Island with this stretch. They have that fight. I think they have the Daly Anderson fight coming up also in Italy. It's just like it's almost like why not just mash up all four or five of these cards together, all four of these cards together, and just get one Super Europe card. Like, screw it, just do it. Give me a fight card that has a Page fight, that has a Patricky Pitbull fight, that has a Paul Daly fight. Give it all, because I think when you spread it thin, and this is a point I've already said several times, but when you spread it thin, no one cares. When you pack it all together, you might get way more traction and way more eyeballs.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's like the UFC these days. There's just times where some of these fight night cards, I'm just like, man, not extremely interested in it. There is part of that. I mean, of course, something that I kind of heard a couple of weeks ago about Patricio Pitbull, that he was in the final stages of getting his visa to get into the U.S., and that did happen. And now him and Pedro Carvalho are going to fight November the 12th here in the States at the Mohegan Sun. Of course, that is a part the Featherweight World Grand Prix. And look, it's I mean, so much about mixed martial arts over the past 6 months has really ultimately been about the UFC. So it's kind of interesting to see, can Bellator, this is not a card that I think is gonna, my guess will be you're not gonna see a ton of coverage in terms of this Bellator event. I know as we're doing the show, got the email from Bellator, they're doing a virtual media day. tomorrow morning, on Thursday morning, for this card. So be kind of interesting to see what kind of coverage this fight card gets. But yeah, something you got to note about that. There is a Bellator fight card coming up this weekend. So that is definitely something to pay attention to here. So Daniels, we start to kind of wrap up this show. Is there anything we didn't mention that we should have mentioned?
Gosh, I don't know, man. I think we talked a lot of mixed martial arts, and obviously we had a tough topic to start the show off, but we had to get through it. But you know, I mean, I think I'll leave you on this. I think it's worth going back to the coverage of Willie card, just mentioning some of the performances real quick that we didn't mention, just to give him some love, because you know, I just wanted to mention that one. Damon Jackson had a hell of an upset over Mirsad Bektik, getting that guillotine choke after getting dominated for three rounds. I thought that was dope as hell. I thought the Kevin Holland Darren Stewart fight was a freaking barn burner. I thought Johnny Walker fight against Ryan Spann was great, back and forth, and then Walker rocked him and then knocked him out whenever he shot him for the takedown. Spann did. Cerrone Price is pretty good, minus the eye pokes. And I will also say that, oh, also Derek Minner tapping out TJ Laramie. That was a shocker when he got the guillotine. And the Randy Costa bantamweight knockout over Jordy Newsome was dope. So I just wanted to give some love to some of those performances on a long fight card.
Yeah, I will note, I actually spoke to Tyson Nam yesterday, so look for that interview up on the MMAReport.com's YouTube channel. Also, that interview will be a part of the Sunday interview podcast that I do put out. Also, a part of that will be Damon Jackson, speaking to him here later on this afternoon, so be sure to check that out. Also, some other interviews that I've got lined up. I'm going to be talking to Andre Uhle on Friday to talk to him about his split decision win against Irwin Rivera. Also, going to be talking to Justin Wetzel. He's going to be a part of LFA next week. So got a couple interviews, got you lined up for there. So be on the lookout for those over at themmareport.com. And Dale, I got to say this. I was actually surprised I did not get a text from you on Saturday night with a little rubbing it in that my Tampa Bay Lightning didn't show up for game one.
I know. It's because I was at work. I was watching the game at work, but it's, you know, it was I was hardcore editing videos while watching the game, but gosh, I really hope the Stars win, but I also think it would be cool if we go to a game seven. But we got game three tonight, 7 PM my time, 8 PM your time. I'll be watching at work. I work at a TV station, and the TVs we have only have the basic ABC, CBS, NBC. That's all we have. So I'm so thankful the games are on NBC, and hopefully there are no mistakes in my video editing today.
Yeah, I will tell you this. In terms of sporting events that I have attended in person, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals is by far the greatest sporting event I've ever been to.
What was that? Which year was that?
2004, when the Lightning beat the Flames here in Tampa.
I
will tell you, it was... It's unbelievable, because you're at the edge of your seat every shot. Like, it was like Monday night, I'm here in the office working late, and like I'm on the edge of my seat those last 3 minutes as I'm just hoping the Stars aren't going to find another goal to tie the thing up. I mean, it is. I would tell you, I did not grow up a hockey fan. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning came into existence basically when I was, I want to say like fifth, sixth grade is when they came to existence. But I really got into hockey when I was working for a sports radio station here in Tampa, where, you know, 1 year, basically my job was we had this section for our listeners, and basically I had to be at every game essentially. And so I learned so much about hockey. But yeah, that game seven that year, man, that was, there's not a sporting event I've personally attended that I had that kind of feeling. You know, I've not had the pleasure to go to a Super Bowl yet. I've been to Super Bowl week, but I've not actually gone to the game. But just in terms of things I've attended, by far, it's by far the best sporting event I've ever been to.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I feel like that sounds amazing. Literally, Game 7, Stanley Cup, watching your favorite team. There's a few things. That's awesome that you got to experience that, and you got to experience them winning. I would love to experience something like that. I feel like the only things that are comparable are literally Game 7 NBA Finals, literally Super Bowl, your favorite team, literally Game 7 MLB. Or I think the one that you would enjoy the most, Jason, would be National Championship of Florida State. I think that would be number one for you out of things to experience.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being out for the last national title with Jameis Winston. And
oh, you were there?
I wasn't there, just being out and about with FSU fans. And yeah. You know, especially when you're talking about a game-winning drive to win the title, you know, there's that moment. You know, it's like, you know, in football, every kid dreams of being that quarterback's got the ball 2 minutes to go to lead their team down to a championship. You know, I think we've all had that moment in sports where it's your favorite team and it's down to the wire and what that championship could be like, you know, but when you're in attendance, you know, that's, it's one of those nights that I'll just never forget, you know, just being in that and then what it was like in downtown Tampa that whole night. Like, I think I didn't get home till like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I believe it, man. It's party time, especially for a college team. I hope to experience it. It's a shame that the possibility of one of my favorite teams winning a championship happens in a pandemic year. I've literally never seen one of my favorite teams ever win a title. But it sucks it happens this year.
One of the things I didn't watch the end of the game live the other night, but I saw NBA on TNT put a video up of, I'm guessing it was either someone holding a cell phone camera courtside, or maybe it was one of their cameras, and it showed the Anthony Davis game winning shot. No commentary. It is just the actual sound in the arena there at the Wide World Sports at Disney, and just like it really kind of encapsulated of what that environment was like with no fans. It was really weird to kind of hear.
Yeah, that's literally an all-time moment, and it has no fans in the building. That's so sad.
Oh, look, I obviously this past Sunday was the first time I had done a game with no fans in attendance here at Raymond James Stadium, because right now, from the radio aspect, we're not traveling to road games. So the first game of the year we did from Raymond James Stadium, where the game's in the Superdome in New Orleans. But it was, like, I'll tell you, us both being on the technical side, it was weird. It was weird.
Yeah, I did one for the Toros. I did a game for the Toros, and I agree with you. It was so weird to see what at the NFL level, and the intensity must have been much higher. But and I guarantee there's obviously way more people there because, you know, the teams are 53 aside and so many others. But for Toros, it felt like I was watching a practice or a scrimmage. It was crazy how quiet it was and how empty the stadium was. Like, it's not even like we had any media there. Like, we had like 3 media people in the press box, and the coach sat in the stands because he was suspended for the game. So he was like the one person in the stand. But yeah, it's a surreal experience to be there in person for a live sporting event with no fans.
It would be so different. I think it'd be interesting to just kind of hear the perspective of someone who's at one of these UFC events, of what it's like in comparison to when the crowd is there. It's because we hear so many more things. Like you mentioned about the Kevin Holland, Darren Stewart fight, as we can literally hear them talking to each other during the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin Holland, he's like auditioned for a commentary job during his fights. He's unreal. But, the thing is, you do hear that at the UFC, you do get that unfiltered situation with the audio. The things that NBA pundits dream about, imagine if we could hear what they really say. We actually do get that in the UFC product.
I didn't hear this. Someone had told this to me, so I imagine it's true. But they were talking about, I guess, so after week one, Aaron Rodgers, I guess, was doing an interview somewhere, and he was talking about how he realized he needed to change some of his code words because they're not TV friendly.
I believe it. Yeah.
I can tell you from my job of being one of the behind the scenes guys who's controlling the audio of the broadcast, it is you're hearing much more of that shoulder pads hitting each other. You're hearing much more of the commentary there. And because I can tell you this, these teams, they're going back on that TV copy, and all they're doing is listen to the quarterback cadence. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, in addition to making it TV friendly, you're also going to have to change it up all the time, because every single team has someone looking into that. It's all about getting that inch in the air. In football, and they're crazy like that. So I'm sure it's such an unbelievable level of gamesmanship.
Yeah. So I'll be doing the game from Tampa here. So Bucks play Denver for 4:25 East Coast time, come up on Sunday. So yeah, that'll be my Sunday. I'll be at Raymond James Stadium all day long. So, but looking forward to UFC 253. Of course, be sure to check out our sponsors this week: Roman and Medterra. Roman. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport today. And if you're approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Also, be sure to check out Medterra CBD. Go to MedterraCBD.com and enter promo code MMAReport at checkout to receive 20% off. So that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a place for my head quick picks on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Drew Garabo from 102.5 The Bone. Drew, how are you, brother?
I think the biggest mistake we make as people is we tend to personalize that stuff. We tend to not understand the mind of someone who goes through that. And we think, how could you do that? You know, people's minds get wired a certain way and they don't see what they're doing. And you know, I'm reading the four agreements and I read it over and over again. And the one that always comes back to me is take nothing personally. And I tend to take everything personally.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, everything's a flight. Like if you do something with someone else and you didn't call me, it's because you hate me. You know what I mean? Like that's the way that, you know, my mind works that way. And I try to fight it. And yet still to this very day, it still creeps into my head. And so dealing with all that stuff, it was very, very difficult for me to get my head around how she could do some of the things she was doing. And I couldn't find a place of compassion or sympathy. But eventually I did. And I found that really melts away the anger and the hostility, and it's best for everyone. So, you know, if I could impart upon anybody a little direction and advice, it's just try your ass off to find that place of empathy and compassion wherever you can. And you can always find it. Everyone is worth forgiving. I think, like, no matter what somebody did to you, you'll see those news stories where like some dude killed some guy's daughter and the father is on the witness stand saying like how he forgives the guy. And if someone in those positions can find forgiveness, which other people can't understand and other people see as weakness, we can forgive anybody for just about anything.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry Petuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.